Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. Tracy Weiland. She's a national speaker and national author of 11 books, including the new book, Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Dr. Weiland has been a scholar at Stanford University and has held leadership positions at Apple, HP, and Cisco Systems, Inc. Dr. Weiland, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's great to have you. You have 11 books that you've authored. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, yep. There's a lot of activity going on in the world, and I'd like to observe it, research it, and document it. So.
Well, that's perfect. That's perfect. Hey, one of the topics we're going to kick right off here seems so appropriate today because of everything going on with politics in the workplace. So you have a topic you talk about, don't lose your job over politics. That seems pretty appropriate today.
Yes, yes. So, you know, 2016, this is a big year. There's a lot of, I would say it's very vibrant out there. There's a lot of energy around the election. This happens often with every election, but this year it's, you know, very unique because we have different candidates. We have people who are very passionate about change, people who, you know, have different ideas. And it's interesting that it's coming into the workplace, which is fine, but in a very, way that it concerns me because some people could potentially lose their jobs, you know, over talking politics or really creating some animosity in the workplace.
Well, you know, certainly every time an election cycle comes around, especially presidential election, everybody says, oh my gosh, it's the worst it's ever been. It's always the
right.
Yeah, right. I mean, I go back and I listen to some of the news stuff that was talked about even 4 years ago or 8 years ago. It's always the end of the world. It's always something terrible. You know, we're never going to make it through. With either side, it doesn't really matter who gets through the situation. I mean, that's the reality of it. But this year, there is something special about it coming and being a little more entertaining, maybe, and it is coming into work in that type of water cooler talk. What are some of the tips that you see that really could help people and organizations deal with this issue from an HR perspective?
Right. So from an HR perspective, you know, I did some investigation to find out if firms can actually have policies. And what I understand is they can't really have a policy because it's freedom of speech, and people can talk about whatever they want to talk about. However, a lot of companies have explained to me that they are sending, I would say, you know, memos around to their executive leadership teams, more of guidelines on how to make sure that work continues to be productive, that teams stay in state, you know, intact, and that individuals are not alienated. Because the last thing you want as an HR person is to create a hostile work environment. And sometimes when people are very passionate about a candidate or, you know, a situation that they're, you know, watching on TV, they could alienate someone unknowingly because a lot of people are not expressing their positions yet. In fact, many people, you know, as you mentioned in past elections, a lot of people actually don't really engage until it gets closer to, you know, October, November. So I think that's important. So I think number one is, you know, if you're seeing it going on in the workplace, you know, as a leader, you can't ban it, but you can certainly encourage your leadership team to, you know, follow some guidelines, you know, to mediate differences, to, you know, refocus people that they're at work to be productive in work, you know. So that's number one.
No, I think that's a very good, legitimate thing to do, especially in the leadership role, right? I mean, the last thing you need is to have a senior leadership team promoting one way or the other, and it could have an effect on customers as well.
Yes, and I think that it is very important, particularly if you're in a role as a manager where you have employees and don't assume that they have the same viewpoints as you. And I'm finding more and more a lot of people today are just stating that they're independent and they're still waiting to understand all the issues. Number two is you could assume, because either you live in a Democratic state or a Republican state, that everybody in your circle is viewing things the same way as you, and you may not know, and you could alienate business. And I think it's just important that, you know, that we, you know, I say follow the golden rule, which is don't talk about politics, religion, or sex at work or with clients. And if people bring it up, then develop some strategies on how to, you know, maneuver the conversation in a different way.
So when you're talking about this with employers, and they're saying, hey, you know, how can I go about making sure that we get them back on track and talk to them about work? What are some of the things that you're telling them to do in terms of them directly, them specifically, in getting people back into those type of conversations?
So first is, you know, as an individual, if you're put on the spot, you know, and, you know, people are very passionate this year. So there's no shortage of people wanting to talk about the election. And it's a good time for all of us to practice active listening, which is tell me more. Just sit back and say, tell me more. Because let's face it, when people have selected a candidate, they're only going to watch and listen to and read the media that supports their view. And if you have a different opinion, you're probably doing the same thing. So active listening, I think, is a good thing because everyone comes from a different background and environment, and that helps them decide why they feel or value certain things. So number one, you know, you can do that, let people air their piece, and then redirect the conversation. I'm a big fan of, you know, tell me more, or tell me why. Oh, that's so interesting. You know, and now, oh, by the way, you know, we're working on a project together, and the due date is next Wednesday. Let's take that conversation offline for now, because I think it's fascinating, and let's get focused on what we're here to do today. You know, so just, again, divert things back to something that's more neutral so that people can get back on track without feeling alienated.
When they're talking about social media and the use of social media today, and that has really crept into the workplace more and more as people use their smartphones, or even when organizations are tweeting out different things or focused on LinkedIn, you know, that is a source of potential conflict, especially when people and employees or bosses, whether they should or should not be connected depends on the organization and the way they structure it. But this is certainly an area where trouble can occur. You know, what are you recommending in regards to organizations and how they handle the social media side of this?
Yeah, and, you know, I think that is a very good question, because some people have advised me that the companies are pretty hands-off. They're very, you know, they're not going to follow every employee's tweet and their value systems, because they have diverse organizations and everyone's entitled. However, I have heard from other companies that it does impact their business, and so they've had to publish some guidelines, because people in all of the news stories, you know, they've had employees go overboard in terms of passion and opinion, not just on the election, but on other things that are going on in the world. And they felt that, you know, when clients start to contact them, because they're tainting the brand. And so other companies have said that they've had to send around to employees guidelines, because they're affiliated with the company. They may be using the company's systems, right? They may be tweeting during work hours using the company's property, that they have to take it offline, do it at home, and maybe use a different handle. So I think each company has to really reflect on how critical is that, you know, what do they want to share with their employees, and what do they want their employees to do. And I have not gotten any consistency, because it is such a new thing and we have such diverse populations.
We're talking with Dr. Tracy Weiland. She's an author of 11 books, including Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. We're going to talk about that probably in the next segment. But right now we're talking about Don't Lose Your Job All Over Politics. And this is a highly contested year, though, again, I say that they say that every 4 years. The reality is this one has a little more flair, has a little more fun maybe than normal. You know, Dr. Weiland, what do you think are things that organizations should look at when it comes to the hostile environment part? Because, look, hostile is somebody's opinion. And, you know, if I don't like somebody's opinion, I might find that to be hostile.
Right. So, you know, if you look at the EEOC, you know, creating a hostile environment can be can create an issue for HR and for firms, because if an employee perhaps doesn't come into work because they feel like they may be alienated by a team or a group, almost ganged up upon, that means the company is going to lose revenue because that person is not productive. Or if someone, you know, is hanging a lot of posters, negative posters around the environment, snickering at people, you know, this, you know, you go to work to, you know, for a reason. You know, you're getting paid to do a job, you know, and employee productivity is key. If the productivity is broken, then we need to make sure as HR leaders that we address that. You know, people, after November, decisions will be made, there will be a president, and then life goes on. And isn't it amazing, as you referred to, we had so many things to talk about before the election year. We talked about, you know, our summer vacations, our holidays, our kids, you know, our social activities, and we talked about work. And so that will all return. But what will happen if someone is very hurt by a lot of the previous discussions, now there could be repercussions of that. They may not feel comfortable working with another employee. They may not feel comfortable on a team. A manager who, you know, an employee may have alienated may think twice about promoting someone because they express their views so strongly and they happen to be different. So I think, you know, you have to be very careful about creating these hostile environments because you want people to, you know, enjoy coming to work. I do encourage leadership and executives to bring people to a higher level. You know, if people are very passionate, I have been in situations, in family situations, social situations, and business situations, and a great strategy is find a common point of view. Instead of focusing on the different viewpoints about the candidates or the political parties, find a common ground. And we have one in common. It's great that we live in America. We have this incredible opportunity to be energized about an election. We have the right to vote. We have freedoms of choice in our country. A lot of people around the world do not have this. They don't have the ability where they can express opinions. And usually as a leader, if you mention that, it settles people down and they reflect on how vibrant they've been, maybe over-vibrant and energized over their opinion. And they look at the bigger picture is because we do and live in the United States and have these freedoms, we can actually do this every day, no matter what. And I think that if you just get people on a positive track, it would be much more productive.
You are right on all aspects of that. And, of course, we're talking with Dr. Tracy Weigwin, and she is a prominent thought leader on the impact of technology on society, women's leadership and careers. And we're going to be talking with her about one of her books, Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Tracy, I got to tell you, we've been talking about don't lose your job over politics, and I'm just going to focus on that for a second. Why would somebody even lose their job because of that? I mean, are we really to that point where people would actually potentially fire them over their views?
Well, you know, every work environment is different, but if you have, you know, the classic scenario is an employee angers a supervisor and the supervisor retaliates later on by not giving that person the promotion that they might deserve because the supervisor is so angry and finds issues with work or finds a better choice. Or there's, you know, there could be a number of factors. So I think it's important that supervisors and employees remember that people above you and below you can, you know, make moves. And, you know, let's face it, people hire people. And getting along with people is very important today in the workforce.
Well, we would 100% agree with you on that. I mean, look, I mean, let's be realistic, and you sound very pragmatic in terms of your conversation. I think that that is potentially always a problem when the supervisor and the employee doesn't necessarily get along or disagrees. And people like to work for people that they like working with, right? I mean, there has to be an element of if I'm going to spend time with that person as long as I'm going to maybe even more time than I spend with my wife and children, I do kind of have to have some sort of respect or understanding about that person. Do you see the same?
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, a lot of people forget about is at the end of the day, it's a people business. There are a lot of candidates or employees working in a firm who could be eligible for promotion, advancement, and that's, you know, that's part of the problem. As the pyramid goes up, the slots are less and less, so it becomes increasingly more critical that you get along with people and influence in a positive way. Because people make choices, you know, that's just human nature. You could have a dynamite, you know, portfolio, but there's probably someone else has a dynamite portfolio. And it's the one that you want to present to the client, the one that you want to see every day or talk to on the phone every day or work with every day. In fact, some firms are even exercising, you know, this voting people on and off teams. You know, and I think that's a unique way of approaching, you know, the people business, which is, you know, if a team had a choice to vote you on their team or off their team or select their own team members, would you be the one that they pick? I have another example, you know, to directors and vice presidents. If you didn't have that title, would people actually follow you, you know, because it's all about leadership today and it's all about being able to bring people with you in a positive way.
We're talking with national speaker and national author, Dr. Tracy Wagwan. She is going to be talking about, in the next section, her new book, Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. We've been talking about don't lose your job over politics, and that is where we're going to end this section. You are listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. Join the Northeast Human Resource Association at their annual conference from September 28th through 30th in Falmouth, Massachusetts. See why the NERA conference is sure to be 2.5 days of HR education you won't want to miss. With awesome keynotes, you'll be sure to leave Falmouth with new resources and key knowledge to support you in your career and earn up to 15.5 SHRM and HRCI credits. Register now at nehra.com or by calling 781-235-2900.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Dr. Tracy Wagwan. She's a prominent thought leader on the impact of technology on society, work, women's leadership, and careers. And we're going to be talking a little bit about her new book, Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Dr. Wagwan, tell us a little bit about your book.
Sure. So actually the book is a 360-degree look at employment today, and I researched it by interviewing HR executives, recruiters, hiring managers, and also employees who were, you know, making transfers or pursuing new positions successfully in the workplace, because life has changed in a digital world, and I felt it was important that we look at all of the aspects of what it is like today to be employed for life.
When you're looking at your career, because many of the audience may not know who you are, can you share like your personal career journey that culminated to this level of success in creating 11 books and working through your organization to make this happen?
Yeah, so, you know, in a nutshell, my career is probably more like what young people are experiencing today. You know, I actually talk about this at commencements. I call it, you know, when doors close, windows open. It has not been the straight path that our parents have had of the past. It has been a series of stops and starts. It has been a series of a lot of transitions. So, you know, I started in New York City. I, you know, got that liberal arts degree. I worked in the media industry in magazines, actually, at Vogue. And then I had a transition, you know, the door closed because my grandmother had gotten Alzheimer's, and we shifted out to California. And I had to start all over again. And that was very tough because, you know, it was very technical where I live now in Silicon Valley. And education it has to be much more robust than a liberal arts degree, let's put it that way. So, you know, because of the series of events that affected me, that helped me become, you know, more aggressive about really positioning my own career and realizing that I am totally responsible for my outcomes. And I think that's a really important for people today, is to realize the company isn't going to take care of you. You really have to take ownership of your career and maneuver yourself and position yourself for success.
In the book, you mentioned that you talked about, you know, career trends, right? Career trends that are happening out there. And you also mentioned the digital changes that are happening in the world today. When you interviewed a number of these HR professionals, did you find that there was truly a theme, or was it really sporadic in terms of how people are dealing with today's career work?
No, I think the corporate world has changed, and HR executives have expressed that. And let me just give you some examples. You know, in the past, we used to have the what we call the employee mindset. You go to work, I tell you what to do, I progress you through, you know, the training, the ranks, and you stay with me for life. Today, companies are saying, I need you to have an entrepreneurial mindset. That is, when you come into a company, you need to take ownership of your job like a CEO. And I remember sitting down with my employees and saying to them, the job that you're hired for today is not going to look anything like this job a year from now. And the reason is because of you. Because you are the one who's going to be strategic. You're the one who's going to keep up with the trends and understand where we need to bring this job. And that is consistent with many firms today, that they want employees to understand that it's all about contribution. And that's the second thing that's been very consistent. Leadership today is not as in the past. You know, contribution, not longevity, is what is going to get you those executive leadership roles. Because many employees say to me, you know, they look to the right and left and say, why did that new person get hired or promoted over me? You know, why did that younger person get provided over me? And I say it's all about contribution, because they're actually taking ownership of their job, they're contributing, they're solving problems they weren't hired to solve, and that's why they're getting promoted. And that's pretty consistent now in a lot of companies who realize that we're living in a very volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world. I call it the VUCA world. And we have to stay very, you know, we have to keep up with, it's very competitive now, so we have to really keep very sharp, and we need our employees to be very sharp.
Yes, and there's no question that the roles keep changing, the innovation keeps changing, and of course that is exactly what is needed. But there is a steady, there's a steadiness to engagement and keeping people engaged. And did these HR professionals in your book talk about, you know, how the engagement piece has changed today to keep and retain great talent?
Yes, and, you know, here's one big shift, and I think HR is getting on with this, is succession planning needs to start at day one. So in the past, you know, in one of my research studies, I actually went out and asked three generations, you know, population in the workforce, the millennials, Gen X, and the baby boomers, and I went out and asked them, men and women, at what stage or what point in your life do you think that you will be a leader? And pretty consistently, our baby boomers, which is sort of like age 50 and up, and our Gen X, which today is, you know, 40s, late 30s, 40s, would say, you know, in my 40s. And the millennials came in, which is, you know, our youngest generation in the workforce, and they said, no, in my 20s. So the expectation by younger generations coming in is that they want to be leaders, and succession planning for us in HR needs to start at day one. And we need to make sure that we keep those doors open. Because people say, well, how do you stop the turnover of the younger generation? Well, they need to feel like they're contributing. They need to feel like they have value and engagement. that they need to feel like that they can participate and not wait in line. And so, you know, I think it's important as us, as HR leaders, to remember that every generation has a contribution. We will be working with, at some point, five generations in the workforce. In fact, McDonald's is telling me their youngest employee is 14 and a half, working on a part-time permit. And Walmart's oldest employee is 103. He's still in the workforce today. And so we have to remember that people are not entering and exiting the workforce like in the past, because we're living longer. We have an expectation of working. A lot of us will be working 70 years, if you can imagine that. A lot of us will be making a lot of outliving companies that we're working for today. And so we have to think about now as ourselves, as you know, as a product that generates revenue, and how are we going to continue to motivate each generation that comes in?
You know, it's interesting as we look at this. You know, one of the things I think about is, you know, careers, even the technological shift of what somebody did for many, many years has completely changed. I use the manufacturing environment as an example all the time. You know, you used to go out and make widgets. Well, now you need to be technologically savvy to run the computer that runs the machine that makes widgets. And that is a big shift for someone, especially that's older. And I'm not saying that is a stereotypical statement, but it is in reality to the fact that some older folk are struggling with the fact of this technology change, and it's making an impact in the workplace. What did you see or hear from those HR professionals in terms of talking about the technology shift?
Yeah, and actually that's a very good example you brought up, was manufacturing, because when I moved out to Silicon Valley, working at Vogue, you know, mind you, and that mindset, I actually was put into manufacturing. That was my job, and I, you know, had to learn about manufacturing, production lines, prototyping, and a lot of the widgets. And it was interesting, at that time, it was very manual, although in Silicon Valley, they were introducing robotics. They were introducing, right, that we ran on ERP systems, which are enterprise resource planning systems. And what I found is that the way to survive this is to take advantage of the resources at work. And so I would sign up on my own time for any kind of class or opportunity or team that I could join that would expose the technology to me. And, you know, and that's where, you know, HR people who are savvy understand that you need to remind your employees that there are plenty of opportunities to self-train or learn about things because you have resources at work. Number two is give them lateral moves and rotational opportunities. And that's exactly what I did, is I volunteered for teams that would help me touch the technology. And number three, as an employee, you know, reach out to your vendors. Vendors are very, very smart. You take their information and you understand that they're always going to be selling their product, but they have a lot of technology know-how, and they are, you know, very willing to share and train teams. And so as I moved into management, I would bring in vendors who would help, you know, help my teams educate themselves. At the end of the day, as an employee, it's up to you. The HR manager has to create the environment and the resources, and open the doors so that employees can pursue and learn new things. You know, let's face it, today, manufacturing today, you know, I'll just give an example. Is I used to be trained and have one person on my right and one person on my left, right, and that's how you would learn about production. Today, you can use wearable technology and augmented virtual reality. Actually, BMW has a great video on this, where an individual is getting trained repairing a car, right, by using the new technology. So there's no person on his left or his right. He's using the technology today. And the good news is technology is getting easier and easier. We're all getting much more familiar with it because we're all using it in our daily lives. And it is really up to us to be able to find it and learn it and use it. And I just keep encouraging people over and over again, don't lose track of it. It's here to stay.
One of the other trends that we've certainly seen, and I'm sure you have heard in regards to, is flex time. And there's a lot of, you know, news media stories about how good or how bad that is, and how that people want, you know, their own time, or they want, you know, to be able to work when they want to work, and that may work in some environments but not others. What did you hear from the HR professionals in regards to that topic?
Yeah, so flex time is, you know, we live in a 24/7 world. We live in a digital world. Many of us will be managing teams globally in all kinds of time zones. What has to shift is the expectation of face time and how we actually lead our teams. So management by objectives is a theme, and I know a lot of HR executives know about this, you know, but we have to shift as managers to leading our teams to objectives and goals and creating, you know, whether it's compensation or different kinds of opportunities for employees, because you're working on a project and you're achieving that goal. It's interesting that you mentioned about flex time, because I actually ran a large virtual organization, and I wanted it to be a virtual organization because I myself prefer to work virtually and have talent all over the world, because a lot of times the talent, the best talent is not in your neighborhood. The best talent is around the world. And I had to hire a team, and I needed a lot of PhDs, I needed a lot of engineers, and that meant that I needed to look globally. Well, my team was about 70 to 75 people. And I ran a survey, and I asked them, you know, number one is their comfort zone of working virtually, and what were some of the benefits about it, you know, from a cost perspective, from a time perspective. Number two is, did they have times in their lives when they were the most productive, so that we could understand as a team that productivity. And here's what I found is a third of my team were morning birds. They were most productive between 4 a.m. and, like, you know, 11 a.m. I had a third of my team that were night owls. They were most productive between 6 p.m. and, you know, midnight. And a lot of my team was, you know, the last third were the your typical, you know, 9-to-5ers. And so we structured and thought through our project work and developed, you know, rules and really accommodations on, you know, response time. You know, how are we going to get to this objective as a team since we're virtually? What are the goals? Who's responsible for what? What are the roles? And what is the appropriate response time? Because actually we were much more efficient than other teams, because I myself had a 24-hour team, which is incredible when you think about it. Other teams only have an 8-to-5 team or a 9-to-5 team. And so I think what's important is you have to learn how to structure goals and objectives and projects so that this flex time can actually be very productive. On the flip side, what my employees also shared is they were saving a lot of money because they didn't have to have childcare, because they didn't have to buy wardrobes, because they didn't have to pay for, you know, restaurants and company food, and they weren't using gas to drive to work. And so at the end of the day, they felt like they were actually almost got a bonus because they were making more by contributing from home in an environment that they felt that they were more productive in. And so I think it's, you know, up to us to really understand all of the people who, you know, the very diverse workforce, the different requirements. Now, with that said, some individuals could not do it, and they had to shift on to more physical in-office roles, and I understand that. There's just some people who are uncomfortable of working, you know, from home or on their own or not having a lot of people around. And for those, you know, that's their choice. But we also have new technology tools that can embrace the closeness, you know, whether it's instant messaging or texting or using our webcams and Skype and meeting place, you know, different, you know, shared media so that we can feel present. You know, I actually created a video. All my employees had sent in, you know, photos of themselves and bios and backgrounds. And we would have, you know, you structure your weekly meetings become weekly phone call meetings, and you rotate the time zones. So I think it's possible. I think the manager has to think out of the box, and I think that companies have to be more receptive to it. But at the same time, keep your eye on the revenue and profitability.
We're talking with Dr. Tracy Weiland. She's a national speaker and national author, and she's authored 11 books, including Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're having an awesome conversation with Dr. Tracy Weiland. She's a prominent thought leader, national speaker, and of course, as I said, author of 11 books. It's hard to believe. I have trouble writing like one page. Forget about 11 books. But in this particular case, I think it's awesome. And one of them, we're talking about Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Tracy, one of the other books that we talked about here, or I'd like to talk about here, is Women Lead. It's a book you wrote in 2013, but it's become very, very popular. Can you share why you think, A, the book has become so popular and a little bit about it so that we can then talk about the content?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of my research in the previous books to Women Lead was about women doing business overseas. So I have about seven books on that. Because I was an independent woman working in Silicon Valley, working in manufacturing and commuting basically overseas and observing, you know, the differences culturally and in the workforce of, you know, between men and women in leadership. And then, you know, my readers came back to me and they said, at some point, Tracy, you're going to have to look at the U.S. women and the positions there. You're always looking overseas and, you know, why not do something locally? And I said, you know what, you're right, because we're living in a very digital world, and there are shifts. You know, thanks to technology, I think women are, you know, incredibly advanced because, you know, let's face it, we have mobile technology. You know, everything from the microwave to our mobile phones has really helped women and men, you know, actually be more free in terms of, you know, use of time. So what I did is, you know, I, with my research team, actually looked at, we did two studies. We wanted to look at modern-day leadership in a digital world. And, you know, we felt that the time was right for women. And so we did two comprehensive research studies. One is a qualitative study where actually I interviewed over 250 women in leadership roles, anyone from who's running a business to a senior leadership in a company to nonprofit organizations to healthcare systems. And then the second one is we did a quantitative study. So we actually went across the United States and surveyed men and women in leadership positions. And then what you do is you triangulate, right, the results. And we had very interesting findings. And so we felt like, wow, the world has really changed. And what we found is that women were very well positioned for the future. And so that's when we decided, you know, we need to write a book about this. And it became very popular, and still you get multiple requests for speeches and book discussions on it.
When you were researching this book and really coming across, and in here it says that you interviewed thousands of women and men leaders across three generations. I'm fascinated by the fact that you took and really gave that information a home, one spot, right, for all this interview. Was this stuff you left on the cutting room floor that you weren't able to put in the book? And I'm just curious about if, because book can't hold it all. What, you know, was this stuff that you wish you could have produced for the book?
Oh, for the book. You know, we were limited in funds, so we could only do our study in the United States. And, you know, being a very globalized person, obviously, you want to have funds so that you can do comparative studies across the world, the different countries. You want to be able to slice and dice your data so you can actually, because our population is so diverse, are there differences, between, race, religion, creed, whatever. But when you have limited funds, you can only look at so much because it's, you know, it's expensive to really hire people and run these surveys and crunch the data and, you know, and publish it. So I think that's, you know, that's one of the downsides. And then, of course, you want to do a second study, you know, and be able to go on. But when the funds are limited, you know, you do what you can do.
No, of course. Funds are always the baseline for everything, isn't it? It's just we have to have the money to be able to produce them. And hopefully at the end of this show, people will go to hrpowerhour.com and click on it and buy one of these books because they are great. They are good information for women as well as leaders out there. Tell me about your biggest finding that the book brings to life in terms of this book, Women Lead.
Yeah, so the biggest finding was, so what we did, just so people understand on the quantitative studies, we used the 10 key modern-day leadership characteristics, skills, and attributes in our study. So it's, you know, communication skills, complex problem-solving, the ability to lead teams. These are typical things that other academics measure, right? So we didn't create a new survey. We just looked at the common ones. But what we found is that women and men ranked women highest on all of these modern-day leadership skills. So what we expected is that women would rank women highest and men would rank men highest. But we didn't get that result. We found that men and women ranked women highest, right? And so what we had to do was almost dissect the data in a different way. And we looked at the women just to see, you know, by actually what I said is let's go by generation, baby boomers, X, and millennials, and see if there's any differences there. And then we went through the men, and that's where we saw some differences, that actually our millennial men and our generation men, X men, which is basically sort of like 53 and under, 54 and under, they didn't see any differences between men and women in leadership. But we had this little population, which is the boomer men, that saw differences. And that was the only population that saw differences, which actually makes sense. If you just sit back and reflect on a male who's like 54, 55 and up, what kind of background or workforce did they start in? Who were the leaders? Were women working? And so it sort of made sense to us that that population would see the world differently. But what we really thought was a big finding is that our Gen X men and our Gen Y millennial men didn't see the world in roles anymore. Our women certainly didn't, but now we also are seeing our younger generation. And why it makes sense? Because a lot of them worked up with dual working parents, single parents who worked. A lot of them had, you know, a family of a mother and a grandmother both working. So the role, this whole role thing, we felt was just going to quickly shift out with each generation because it's not the same anymore. And that would position women for more leadership roles, more opportunities, but it also will shift our younger generation as well. So I think that was the biggest finding that we had. And then I thought that was very positive for women and very just positive in general.
No question. You know, in the book, Chapter 7, you talk about negotiation, the quote-unquote, the women's advantage. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that was actually a very interesting finding because what we found is that in our quantitative study, that's the survey one, men and women ranked men higher in negotiating skills. But in my qualitative study where I actually went out and interviewed people, women were actually ranked pretty high in negotiating. And so I asked why are the differences, and it was kind of interesting, is that if you're reading a survey and you're checking off boxes about negotiating, what comes to mind, what a lot of people said, was hassling over a car or a bazaar, and it was very hostile. And the word negotiating had a very hostile kind of connotation to it. And when they think of that, they think of male and aggressive. But when you talk to people and interview them about work negotiating, it takes on a different connotation. And a lot of women said that you actually want women on your negotiating team, because women are very effective at seeing the longer-term goal. They have the ability to bring people together. They see it as a win-win opportunity because it's about business and it's a people business, and we have to, you know, find common goals. And that women, they felt, were much more effective at doing that than men. Now, with that said, we did find that women excel in complex negotiations. However, the one thing they didn't like to do was negotiate for themselves in terms of salary and promotion. And so that was, you know, our aha finding there is, one, the word negotiating when presented to someone in a survey has a negative connotation hostile and a masculine connotation. Number two is women are very effective and should be on negotiating teams, especially on high-profile business. But number three is we have to work with women to get over the fact that it's okay and you should be asking for money and title and promotions, because let's face it, it's going to favor and help your families and your own position and keep you employed for life.
We're talking with Tracy Wylan. She's an author and national speaker. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Join the Northeast Human Resource Association at their annual conference from September 28th through 30th in Falmouth, Massachusetts. See why the NERA conference is sure to be 2.5 days of HR education you won't want to miss. With awesome keynotes, you'll be sure to leave Falmouth with new resources and key knowledge to support you in your career and earn up to 15.5 SHRM and HRCI credits. Register now at nehra.com or by calling 781-235-2900.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we've been talking with Dr. Tracy Wylan. She is a national speaker, national author, and she has authored 11 books, including Employed for Life, 21st Century Careers. Tracy, you know, one of the things that I wanted to make sure as we wrap up today, you have a great blog. Tell the audience about that.
Sure. So, you know, my website is TracyWylan.com, and I blog on, I've been in a lot of different venues, you know, the Huffington Post or BuzzFeed, but, you know, right now I'm blogging on LinkedIn, and I try to talk about different concepts and topics that are relevant not only for HR executives, but for management teams and employees, because I feel very passionate about that. I want people to be successful in their careers and employed.
Well, that's great, and certainly any way we can get information and provide it to the audience, it will be great. You know, one of the things I wanted to just mention here, and I'd be kind of remiss if I didn't, is we did not address comments made recently by Seta Nelia, I'm not sure I said her name properly, Microsoft's chief executive, who told the Conference of Women in Tech that they should not ask for a raise but trust, faith, and karma to reward them appropriately. What's your response to this?
Yeah, so actually, Satya Nadella, he did that conference in Arizona, and I got a lot of calls. It was very interesting on what did I think. And I, you know, because he said, you know, let dogma take over. And I said, you know what, don't let his dogma ruin your karma, because... You know, it's ridiculous, and he had to retract it. He had to retract his statement because women just got all over it. Particularly if you live in the technology world, you know, women are very pragmatic in the technology world and very concerned. And you know, my thought was that, you know, he's a bit older, and his philosophy is probably more traditional. And reflecting on his, he had a longevity. He had a weight. You know, he was in the queue. He was groomed at Microsoft. And was thinking, you know, that was the path, and the world has really changed. So, and I think a lot of us realize that, you know, he was out of step on that one.
Well, you know, we've been talking about, obviously, your website, Tracy, T-R-A-C-E-Y, Weiland, W-I-L-E-N.com. You're on Twitter, of course, at Tracy Weiland, Facebook, Dr. Tracy Weiland. And you're on LinkedIn. You're everywhere in social media you need to be.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of social media and, of course, now on Instagram as well. But, you know, I think what's important is that, you know, we don't let the social media rule our lives. I like to be able to be present enough so people can find me in whatever communication channel that they prefer to use. You know, whether it's in the book format, the flat format, whether it's in the digital format, whether it's on a radio or TV or in a speaking venue, to make sure that they get, you know, information in a way that's comfortable for them.
You're going on speaking tour, or have been, I should say. Any place that we should be looking for you in September, October?
Well, I'll be, you know, usually on the speaking tours, I spend a lot of time on the East Coast and also in the Midwest. So we're still formulating, although I have a couple out in California. So it just varies. You know, it's a very popular time for people to invite me. I have a couple pending perhaps in Europe and in Asia. And I'm pretty excited that people are energized about the message.
No, that's awesome. Well, Dr. Tracy Weiland, I want to thank you so much for being on the HR Power Hour today. I appreciate your insight in regards to everything that we talked about, from career trends and about women's issues. I think this was a great conversation today, and I hope everybody goes to HRPowerHour.com right after this show and buys your book, Employed for Life, 21st Century Career Trends. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Robert Brooks. Let's talk about protecting your company's trade secrets. In May 2016, President Obama signed the Defend Trade Secrets Act. This new law gives employers expanded rights to protect their confidential information. The new law allows your company to sue employees for disclosing or misusing your company's trade secrets. Employers can also collect punitive damages and attorney fees. But there's a catch. The new law carves out whistleblower protections for employees who disclose trade secrets to their own lawyers or to government officials for the purpose of disclosing unlawful activity by their company. If an employer wants to be able to claim punitive damages and attorney fees under the DTSA, the employer must inform employees of their whistleblower rights in advance. So to take advantage of the new law, employers should update all their nondisclosure and confidentiality agreements and any policies they have regarding protection of company secrets. Does this mean you need to go back and redo every confidentiality agreement in the company? No. The notice provisions only apply to confidentiality agreements entered into after the statute was passed on May 11. For more information, please contact us at VeralDana.com.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.